process, when done right, enables creativity. It enables incredible workforce evolution, better organization, better system use. It frees up people's time. It gives you your lives back. You know, there's this entire totally opposite narrative that we can associate with process that I find extremely exciting. And I would love everyone to be excited about doing process work.
Welcome to Million Dollar Flip-Flops, the podcast that invites you on a transformative journey to unlock the secrets of living life to the fullest. In this podcast, we dive deep into the minds of thought leaders, game changers, and business builders from around the world. If you're a business owner feeling trapped, overwhelmed, and longing for the time freedom you once dreamt of, this podcast is your beacon of hope. Buckle up, because here we go.
So, I mean, we can just rock and roll if you're ready. We're in an elevator. I have no idea who you are. Give me the spiel.
Sure. So I'm Sam Joshak. I am a process scientist. My whole career is just based around business process analysis, work, consulting, software. I'm in the software business right now, trying to build process science-based software. And other than that, I live here with my wife and my nine-month-old son. I studied biology originally, and then I went into this process business early on in my career. I'm the author of Becoming a Conscious Business. And other than that, I don't have much free time. So I'm happy to talk about anything in additional detail, but I'll pause there.
Amazing. So our new program is, it's called Legendary Living, and it's all through conscious decision making for entrepreneurs. Like that's what it's all about. So I'm curious how you, what got you into this and kind of what excites you about that? On its face, it's a super boring topic, right? Process science.
Yeah.
But you love it. I want to know why you love it.
Yeah, I definitely love it. So the short version of how I got into it is I was a science student originally. I thought I was going to be a doctor. And then at the very last minute, I sort of freaked out and I decided I'm not going to do that path for a variety of reasons. So here I am in 2009, right after the worst crash probably ever. I have a biology degree and a chemistry degree. So, you know, people were telling me, just put your head in a hole for a few years. You're not going to get a job. It's not going to work out for you with that combo. But I came to Richmond and I found a job through just the alumni network. And it was with water and wastewater treatment engineering. And it was a good mix of just having a bio degree and understanding basic water and science. And when I got into that, it was a very process heavy job. And it was in a very tactile industrial setting. I was helping build water treatment equipment. On site, I was running studies, and it was all in the service of selling these massive plants, essentially, that, you know, your city purifies water with these kind of plants. And I really just fell in love with the math and the puzzles and the process aspects. That's where I first got introduced to these process systems and working with water. There's a very dynamic flow aspect to it and trying to understand how do we get these water systems up and running and how do we apply everything we know, and really just how do we understand these really complicated process systems. So my introduction was very early in my career. And then I went and I studied process formally, and I learned there's all this history in the car manufacturing industry. And there's all this like rich history around Lean and Six Sigma and these buzzwords that probably everyone's heard at some point. So I studied all that. And then just to make probably what could be a very long story short, the digital revolution happened. And everyone needed process work. And all of a sudden, there was no one who knew how to apply manufacturing-based process work to digital services and to this new digital world we live in. So in a lot of ways, process has been around for a very long time. But now in this very unique time in history, it's also a brand new frontier where everyone needs it and nobody has it. So I've really made my whole career in that space. And I've done a lot of writing, exploration, speaking, and there's still so much to learn. And in some ways, everyone thinks process, blah, boring, stifling, lack of creativity, gross, nobody wants to do it. But then on the underneath and the under that surface, there's this growing massive demand for people who can work with process data, structure it, understand it, communicate it. And that's really the space I live in. And I'm very passionate about it, and it's very exciting. And we can go a lot of different directions with that at your discretion.
Yeah. I mean, entrepreneurs in general are terrible at process. You know, they're typically visionaries, and I think that's where I see people plateau, is it's process and people, right? They think they can do everything. They literally have no process about any of it. It just gets done. So, and then you can only do so much yourself, you know, and that's what leads to burnout. So, you know, what's your niche now? Do you have a certain type of person you like to help, or enjoy? I know it could help anybody, right? So how are you deciding who to work with?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it is exciting and sometimes challenging because I can help anyone. And I'm not really restricted by industry. I'm not really restricted by size. I've had clients from pre-seed startup all the way through like Fortune 100 enterprise. And how I normally do it today, to be honest with you, is what excites me, how much money do I need, and an intersection of kind of all those things. And like what client I think I can have the best fit, right? So as I matured in my career, it's what is going to be a good client and a client that can actually receive and have like a good outcome versus, you know, what's just knocking at my door. So that's what carries it a lot. And a lot of times my portfolio of consulting work, and right now I'm focusing on building this, all this knowledge and software so that I can be scalable. And a lot of entrepreneurs, people have access to this type of stuff. But right now in my consulting portfolio, I do have a large enterprise client where I'm helping like very high level process strategy. And then I have some startups and that's usually how it goes. Some like small fun projects that are usually like like 3 to 6 months, and then some more like retainer deals where I'm helping with sort of massive strategic stuff. And I like to just keep my life dynamic. That's really the short answer, which is what's my portfolio? How do I pick work? Whatever things will keep me engaged and also fulfilled.
You're here, man. There's so much I could unpack just out of that paragraph, right? I mean, what we do around here ultimately is designed from the end. You know, it's what life do I want to have? Who do I want to help and why? Along with who do I want to become as a person? What do I want my day-to-day to look like? And then build a business that fits that and not just hope it happens someday in the future and then react, die. It never happened, you know? I was on a call earlier and they were talking about sales model. And I do, when we sell our program, I do a two-step sales call. So there's a 20-minute triage call and then there's an hour-long strategy call. And they're like, well, why would you do it in two phases? I think, because I don't want to be on the phone for an hour with somebody I know I'm not going to work with. You know, it's not for everybody. It's not, either they're not ready or I don't want to work with them. So I only want to spend 15 minutes figuring that out, right? So, man, you hit the nail on the head with, you know, who do I want to work with? And then, so give me some tips, because I think that alone is a process most entrepreneurs don't have. Usually comes at a time when maybe they're cash poor, is where I see it a lot. They take on people they wouldn't normally work with because they need the money, and then everyone loses. So what are some signs for you, or what are some things you would tell somebody that when they're deciding to work with somebody, irrespective of industry, what are you looking for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just going to say, so process-wise, this may sound counterintuitive, but a lot of my answers are going to be, you have to follow your intuitive wisdom and your gut, which may not seem like a process, but actually when you study process, it's sort of the highest form of process, which is to integrate all of your sensory faculties to make good decisions. And a lot of times when I'm screening clients, I have, you know, 15 years of client experience now. So the first thing is, it's just like, if you're going on a date or you're networking and you just get a feeling from people, if you open yourself to it, or you, maybe it's something you have to cultivate because you're really in your head all the time. Because you talk about conscious decision-making, a lot of times the first 10 seconds of talking to a client, I'm going to have an impression because I had so many clients now. I'm going to get like a visceral, this person seems receptive. This person seems open. They seem to have value alignment. They seem to have an authentic desire to improve themselves or their business. They seem to be the kind of person that is not scattered, like they have the mental capacity. These are all things that I get in the first minute or so of talking to somebody, because some of the things I can unpack there are, a lot of people want solutions today because there's a lot of problems and people are moving at a million miles an hour. If you talk to somebody and you get the sense that they're multitasking while they're talking to you, or they don't even have enough attention to understand this, what they're trying to structure with the engagement that they're talking to you about, it's probably a red flag that you're going to have a difficult time getting to the end of said engagement. So there's a few things like that where I just don't have, I listen to those red flags now and I just politely decline when I feel like this is going to be me pulling a horse to water. This is going to be me struggling to maintain a profitable hourly rate that feels good to me at this point in my career. So I would say a lot of it is about healthy boundary setting and being able to know what your boundaries are, identify them quickly, and then have the discipline to act on them. But you know, that's obviously easier said than done. That's probably like 10 years of practice that went into just those few elements. So, you know, there's a lot of conscious decision-making. There's a lot of being empathetic. There's a lot of active listening involved. And there's a lot of knowing what is going to work for you for a project or for work. And I think again, I don't want to make that sound overly simple, but those are some of the key factors for me, at least.
Yeah. I mean, well said, well said. And it's like most things, right? It's, I always use the analogy of a plumber. You know, if he's in and out in 15 minutes and he charges you $300, it's not the 15 minutes, it's the 15 years it took him to learn how to do it in 15 minutes, right?
Yeah.
So all you care about is the result. So,
right. And he also had to have himself available to take on that lucrative project, right? If he was filled with doing $50 projects for 6 hours each all over the place, you don't have any space. You have to be able to create space for good opportunity to come to you. That's another big one.
Yeah. Hey gang, I hope you're enjoying today's episode. Normally, this is where you'd be asked to buy something or go download some lead magnet. Not here. You may or may not know that we are on a mission to change 1 million entrepreneurs' lives with this podcast, the book, the journal, and more. And through our foundation, we want to send 1 million kids on life-changing trips. After all, 100% of our profits are donated from everything we do. Here is where you come in. If you're enjoying today's episode, and I hope you are, it likely made you think of someone who needs to hear it. Pause me right now, I'll wait, and share the episode with them. It's the only way we can impact as many business owners as possible, and you never know whose life you could change. Now back to the show. So tell me about the folks that you work with. Like if I'm looking at your client avatar, you know, I guess start with business size. You know, are these people with 1,000 employees or five, or kind of what's that look like?
So it can be all, and I'm going to expand on that just a little bit and say that to me, from a process science perspective, every business has a similar life cycle, which is we're all born as startups at some point, baby startups. And baby startups all have very similar process problems foundationally. And then they all go through different problems as they try to scale and grow. So there's a very unique set of problems when you're a stable enterprise. And there's a very other unique set of process problems when you're a startup. And I've worked enough in each of those layers where it's not that I'm looking for a particular size, really. It's just depending on, again, are you receptive? Can you be successful? And those kind of things are more what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. Which level do you enjoy working with the most?
I probably enjoy working with larger companies right now, to be honest with you, because startups tend to be the ones that need the most help, but they're actually the least disciplined and they don't have the time to actually commit to it. They think they want the work, but they really just want the magic bullet a lot of the time. They tend to be a little bit less mature. So finding the right large clients, you can have a lot of impact and a lot of scaled impact in a large client environment, especially if they're ready to take on process advice. But now if you flip that on its head, the right startup client is the most rewarding because you can see immediate impact and a lot of growth. And the wrong enterprise client can be the most soul-sucking, crushing thing you can do, because you can just, it's a black hole of like trying to help them and nothing moves and the needle is impossibly stuck. So I do want to caveat that. But I'd say in general, you know, startups are tough because they need help, but they're very frenetic and they sometimes don't want to put in the work that they need to get what they need.
Yeah. How often does somebody come into you and they think they need, we'll call it process work, but what they really need is just clarity and they need to figure out who they're serving and why versus putting processes behind 40 things.
Well, it's funny the way you asked that question, because to me, getting clarity and getting understanding of your business where it needs to go, that's the heart of the process work that I deliver. So when does somebody come to me and they ask for process work and they don't need it? Never. They always need process work because to me, everything is process. But the biggest, they do need what you just said, which is if you don't know what you're selling, if you don't have that clarity, if you don't understand your value proposition, if you don't understand your operations versus your project processes and how they collaborate in your early business, you need a lot more process help than somebody who has some of those basic building blocks in place.
You touched on it a little bit, but you know, what are some symptoms? I'm an owner and I wake up and feel a certain way. What are some systems I need Sam in my life?
Sure. The biggest thing for startups and small, medium businesses is when your capacity starts to get over 100%. And let's say ideally for a startup entrepreneur, for an owner or a founder, let's say 50 hours should be what you would expect in your average week. When you start working 70, 80, 90, 100 hours, and there's no stop to that bleed of your capacity, and you seem like your business is growing, hooray, but it's at the cost of your life and all the energy that you have. That's the major symptom for startups where they need process help. Because what you're struggling with those symptoms are ultimately you're not delegating and you're not automating effectively, which are the main targets for scaling for startups. And so that's mostly what I see in the startup space. And then the other big symptom in the startup space is people who know that's the case and they've tried to move forward themselves with scaling and automation by getting the next best SaaS tool, by getting the best practice, you know, CRM, HRIS, whatever it is, and then having totally just underestimated the implementation and completely bungled it. And now they've got all these mangled systems that are not helping and they're actually making their business more confusing and worse. So that's sort of the second probably strongest use case where they took the initiative and they're trying to move forward with scaling. And they just realized that they didn't have the skill set to do it. And then it became a major problem and then they're stuck. So it's the same underlying problem, which is we're trying to grow through appropriate scaling techniques, automation and delegation, but we just don't have the skill set to do it. So that's where I find a lot of startups stuck in their evolution.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that on the, you know, in that growth curve where you need people, but you don't have the money to hire the people. And it's just, you have to pull the trigger at some point, right? Like there's going to be a not equal balance of that thing for a period of time. And I've just seen that comes down to belief. You know, if you really believe in the thing, you'll make it happen. You know, you will just make it happen.
Right. Well, and a lot of startup founders, you know, automation, people always think systems and they think AI and they think robotics. I always like to give this definition to startup people. Automation is just moving decision-making in your business down to a lower cost. Obviously, the lowest cost is a robot, but it could also be an assistant. It can also be a junior person. That's a form of automation. And like you said, once you start getting all this stuff, you're growing, you don't have any money, but you're growing, and it's at your own expense personally, you will always reach for some form of automation. There's no avoiding it if you want your business to continue to live and to grow. And if you're working 100-hour weeks productively, you could be working 100-hour weeks unproductively, and then your business might not be doing well. But let's assume that you are skilled and you feel like, hey, this is working, and you're working 100 hours a week. You've got a business. You've just got to learn how to move those hours down to a lower cost base. That's all it is. And people really struggle with that. Your first hire, your first software acquisition, because the problem is moving your own process knowledge onto paper and into somebody else through training or into a software through configuration, it's not easy. And like you said, it's a skill set that most startup owners can't even articulate that they're struggling with. That's the issue, right? That's one of the core issues.
Yeah. I work with a lot of coaches in myriad industry, and the thing I help people get unstuck. Well, what the hell does that mean? You know, and they know that what they do works when they finally get somebody in front of them, but they don't know how it works or why it works. And, you know, I just spent 2 weeks. Nicole and I went down to Belize for 2 weeks, and I'm writing a second book, which actually has nothing to do with business. That was one piece of it, but it was really, I went through every testimonial I've ever had, every review process I've ever had. I watched hours and hours and hours of video to figure out what one thing are people taking from everything that we're doing together, right? And then I built the new program because that's the one thing that they need. And how can I make it faster and cheaper and easier for them and a better result quicker? And it's an incredible amount of work to deduce that into something. It's a lot simple, not easy.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people chronically underestimate this piece, right? What you're just talking about, which is, oh, I know how to do this. Just lock me in a room for an hour and I'll write it down. You could stare at that piece of paper for 55 minutes before you can write anything. It's like, where do I start? What am I actually doing? What is one step in front of the other? What knowledge am I drawing on? What systems am I referring to? What data am I using? Is it internal to me? Is it external to me? It's tough. And you know, a lot of people, the only way they can train is just follow me around and shadow me and try to figure out what I'm doing.
Monkey see, monkey do.
It's not effective. It's like saying I'm going to run my business with guests in check. You know, you might get there eventually, but we don't need to be fumbling around in the dark. There's people who know how to write down process information. There's people who know how to do these things. And it's skills that I think everyone should learn and have. And that's a lot of what my passion is, which is how do I get people to understand process science better? How do I get them to understand process work and not hate it so much? Because like you said, there's a visceral hatred toward everything process for a lot of people.
Yeah. Where does that come from? It's probably a tangent, but it's like, you know, where was that beat into us when we were younger that we don't like it? Yeah.
Well, there's a few things. It's actually a really fascinating answer, because back in the, you know, 80s and 90s, and probably into the early 2000s, there was this really big association with factory processes and standardization and automation with process work. And it was the antithesis of what people wanted coming into the millennial generation, right? Which is, we don't want to be a cog in the wheel. We don't want to be a part of a machine. We don't want to be part of a standard process. We want to have a more creative, expansive, you know, life. And the idea that there was a process that could be prescribed to them, that was the association, right? Process equated to stifling, constraints, lack of creativity, and mostly this idea that they're going to be part of a factory or a cubicle farm. That was a big fear of a lot of people. And then also just this idea that process work is attached to consultants and all consultants do is reduce headcount. That's another big narrative that you still run into all the time, which is that the only people that do process work, which is mostly true, are consultants. And the only reason consultants are hanging around asking you questions about your process is because you're about to get fired or turned into a robot. So, you know, there's a lot of systemic fear that comes from some of these cultural narratives. And some of it is true to a certain extent historically. But I would say we need to get past that, and we need to have this revolution of thinking, which is process, when done right, enables creativity. It enables incredible workforce evolution, better organization, better system use. It frees up people's time. It gives you your lives back. You know, there's this entire totally opposite narrative that we can associate with process that I find extremely exciting. And I would love everyone to be excited about doing process work.
I think that's probably a good place to end it, man. That was a very inspirational ending. How can people find you? You know, I know this is resonating with a lot of people in this audience. So where are you at? Where can we go?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Sam Drawshack. I'm the only one around. You can find me very easily online if you just search my name. I'm on LinkedIn. Please connect with me. And right now, probably my thing I'm most excited about is Truvel.com. So if you email me at sam@Truvel, or if you go to Truvel, which is Truvle.com, you can sign up. We're about to go live with our first process mapping product of our own design, and it will be opinionated, and it's meant to be easy for small and medium businesses to write down process. So it's not going to be you getting on a Miro or a Mural or a Visio or just like you're a whiteboard and having to create everything yourself. The whole world right now is just blank pages where you have to just figure it all out yourself, which I find very vexing. So we've created a product for you, and everything is there, and it should be easy. So find me at sam@Truvel.com or just sign up for our newsletter. That's the easiest way to reach me, and I'd love to hear from you.
Awesome. Well, buddy, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's been great.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed the episode today on the Million Dollar Flip Flop Podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on your chosen platform that you listen on. If this episode make you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot, and share this episode with them. Or post it on your social media to share with your friends. You can catch the show notes for this episode and any mentioned links in the description of this episode. If you want to see more behind the scenes with Roderick and his guests, be sure to find them on Instagram. It's also where we can have deeper conversations on these episodes. Go to www.instagram.com/milliondollarflipflops. Until next time.